You know, don't look at me in that tone of voice. I know who it was. I did have to mention something. I don't know. I may get a spit wad thrown at me or something. But there's not that many people in the world that have less rhythm than I do. But I have watched this week, and I have found somebody that has less rhythm than I do. I'm not going to say who it was. Some of y'all may know. But we had a good time, BBS. I missed a lot of the songs. I was downstairs in a classroom creating a small riot every night, but we had a lot of fun. I hope you had a chance to at least visit. Past that, we're going to continue today. It worked out well. I wish I could say I timed all this, but it wasn't my doing. Today we get to the point in this series where we talk about the helmet of salvation. And it's a good day because there's some other things going on today. And I wanted to bring up and talk about my own personal salvation a little bit today. So it all fits in together. I'll give you a guess. Can anybody guess what scripture passage we're going to be in? We've been in it now for, 5 weeks? So I think you ought to be catching on. Ephesians 6, 10 to 17 today. Would you bow your heads with me? Father, we just thank you for all the kids that came out for VBS and for all the fun we had, for those that learned about you and those that learned about each other, for the friendship and the fellowship and the fun, for the worship, for the praise. It was an honor and a glory to see kids' faces light up as they sang songs about God, as they worshiped, as they thought about some of the things that maybe they hadn't thought about before, and as they came together as a representative of the church body, and as seeing so many people serve and so many people help, and just having a chance to impact their lives. And we just thank you for that. We ask today that you would open our hearts and our minds to your word and to everything you have for us, and that your will would be made known, made clear, and acted out through everything that happens today. In Christ's name, amen. All right, so today we talk about the helmet of salvation. Now, I'm going to start with the passage like I have, Ephesians 6, starting in verse 10. Finally, be strengthened, maybe I'll start with the passage, by the Lord and by his vast strength. Put on the full armor of God so that you can stand against the schemes of the devil. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, and against the cosmic powers of this darkness, against evil spiritual forces in the heavens. For this reason, take up the full armor of God, so that you may be able to resist in the evil day, and having prepared everything, to take your stand. Stand therefore with truth like a belt around your waist, righteousness like armor on your chest, and your feet sandaled with the readiness of the gospel of peace. In every situation, take up the shield of faith with which you can extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one. Take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. So, the helmet of salvation we're going to talk about today. Now, if you were a Roman, that helmet was a conical metal, either brass or later iron helmet. And they had something interesting on it. They had a couple of cheek guards. They had a couple of flaps that connected to the helmet and came down and covered the main part of the sides of your face. Now, since we're not Romans and we don't use those, I came up with a totally different helmet for us to talk about. And I hid it back here behind the train. I had it freighted in. I think there's only one of you in here that's seen me in this helmet. But I've worn this helmet for a lot of hours. This is what I wear on disaster relief when we go and do chainsaw teams and cut trees off houses and things. Now, it's a lot different than the Roman helmet, but it exemplifies some of the same things, and I wanted to use it as a visual today to talk about some of the aspects of this spiritual helmet that we're supposed to wear. So you can see a couple of things. One, you probably know what that is. That comes down and covers your ears. If you're using a chainsaw, of course, that's important. It helps keep the excess noise out. And, of course, this helps keep the wood chips and things from flying in your face. Now, if we were talking about a spiritual helmet, and we were talking about how you would spiritually protect yourself, this is a pretty good illustration. Any of y'all ever heard that old song? There's an old children's song that said, "Be careful, little ears, what you hear. Be careful, little eyes, what you see." Why do we tell kids that? What is it about hearing things and seeing things that we're worried about? If you hear something often enough, you may well start to believe it, or it may start to influence how you think and what you say. I had a problem with this when I first got saved, and I'll tell you that story in a little bit. But I first got saved at 25, and I had been a sailor for several years. Have y'all ever heard the term "curse like a sailor"? Yeah, I knew all the vocabulary. I knew all the adjectives and adverbs before I got saved. When I got saved, I knew I wasn't supposed to talk like that anymore. And for the first, I don't know, at least a couple of months, I couldn't complete a sentence. I would start to talk, and I was so used to using all of those expletives, all those interesting terms, that once I got saved, I would start a sentence, and I'd say, "Boy, get you stop you." I just couldn't say anything because those words would come to my mind, and I couldn't complete the sentence without them. I had heard it so much, I had been around it so much, and used it so much that it had become a part of who I was. And it was a struggle for me to overcome that. Now, if you wear these when you go out and use a chainsaw, one thing you can't hear that chainsaw very much. You know what else we determine you can't hear? You can't hear somebody that's yelling at you to stop. And you can't hear somebody that's yelling at you to take a break or much of anything else. It blocks out all sound. Spiritual earmuffs aren't quite like that. When we use the Spirit of God to strain what we hear, you know, one of the things that I had to do because of this, all these adjectives and adverbs that I learned in my younger days, I have to really screen what television I watch. If I watch television that has a lot of those adjectives and adverbs in it, I find that not much time goes by, and they're popping into my head all the time and occasionally pop out of my mouth. So there's a lot of TV I can't watch today. I just have to leave it alone. And a lot of times we'll start a movie at home and we'll watch about 5-10 minutes of it. And sometimes we'll go through 4 or 5 movies in 30 minutes trying to find one that we're old enough to watch. You have to spiritually strain what you hear and what comes into your head, because you start to act on it and you start to, it finds a root somewhere in your mind. Not only that, what you see, the visor and the safety glasses that we wear are supposed to protect you from what you see. I won't dwell on television. You all know what you can see on television. You can see a lot more than you could 30 years ago. And a lot of the things that you see are not worthy to be seen. I've really appreciated the movies that we picked when we've done movie night here at the church have all been very clean Christian movies. And that's somewhat of a challenge today. You know, that's somewhat difficult. You can go out on the street and see a lot of things you don't want to see. I took a trip one time with my day job. They sent us down for a week down to New Orleans. And it was the week after Mardi Gras. I think they got a name for that, but I forget what it was. And they put us up in a hotel that was right, there's a particular road, a strip where the main Mardi Gras stuff starts, Bourbon Street. Yeah, I couldn't think of the name of it. And we were at a hotel that was right at the corner of that. And while we were there one night, we thought, well, we'll just walk down there and get something to eat. I was about 50 years old when I made that trip, and I saw things I'd never seen before and never really want to see again. We only made one trip up the street and found a restaurant and came back, but You have to watch what comes into your mind. Now, it might seem strange when you look at this. When you think of salvation, most of the time we talk about and think about a change of heart. We talk about and think about getting your heart right and getting all that. But the Bible talks a lot about your mind. As a matter of fact, Paul says that we should renew our minds. We should be transformed. The biblical word is the same one that we would use to talk about a caterpillar turned into a butterfly. To be transformed by the renewing of your mind. The things that go into your mind change the way you think. when you change the way you think, you naturally change the way you act. And all of these things play together. So in my case, the things that I had learned in the first 25 years of my life, the things that I had seen and the things that I had heard and the things that had taken residence in my mind, were all struggling to keep me away from God. All of these things were opposed to God and opposed to His world view, opposed to His creation, opposed to His rules. Now, I grew up in a household that we didn't go to church. The only times I went to church growing up was 2 weeks out of the summer. I would stay with my grandparents, and I would go to church when I stayed with them. And then about once or twice a year, I would spend the night with a friend of mine over the weekend. And his mom sang at the choir in Green Acres Baptist Church, which was one of the first mega churches, I think, in the United States. A huge church. I think they had 8,000 or 10,000 members back then in the 80s. And that was the only two church experiences I had growing up. Everything else I had seen was very secular. You know, Dad was an alcoholic, and he was into that scene quite a bit. My natural parents divorced and split up, so I was adopted and had stepbrothers and sisters and lived all of that sort of life. But I came to a point where I was on a big gray boat in the middle of the Persian Gulf. I don't know exactly where I was, but we were floating around somewhere there in the Gulf. I do know I was in radar room number 3, and I had been placed on this ship. And the circumstances that got me there, when I think back on it, to me are incredible. I left home at 18, just as soon as I turned 18. The day after I turned 18, I got all my stuff in my car and moved out of the house to get away from Dad. He was my adopted father, and we didn't get along until years later. But I left home just as quick as I could. I moved in with a buddy of mine, and his dad taught end times at various churches. And while I was living with him, a couple of times his dad kind of helped him out financially, so he kind of forced him to come to some of these things when he taught. And I went with him a few times. That was kind of the beginning of what I call God's pursuit of my heart. Well, that went on for a little while, and things developed, and I decided to go in the military. And back then, when you went in the military, the first thing they did is sent you to boot camp. And I hear boot camp has changed. But while I was in boot camp, there was 1 week in boot camp that was called service week. And that's when those people that were serving that week basically took care of all the menial tasks for everything in the boot camp. What that looked like, for the most part, is if you had 40 people in your platoon, about 35 or 36 of them all went to mess duty. Mess is what we call the food, where you go and eat. And what that meant is they would get up about 4 in the morning, and they would go start preparing breakfast. And then they would work, and half of them would get off about 8 o'clock at night and go to bed until 4 in the morning. And the other half would have to work until after midnight rations, which ended, you know, they cleaned up about 1:30. And they'd go get a 2 or 3 hour nap before they started their next 12 to 16 hour day. And you did this for a week. This is called misery. As luck would have it, I was a platoon leader, which meant that I got a few privileges that most people didn't have. I was one of the 6 people in our platoon that didn't have to go do that. So what I did, me and one other guy went to what's called leggings issue. It was my first experience with true government work. I got paid for a whole week and did almost nothing. So what happened is, on graduation day, they had these white lace-up leggings that went from here to here, and it looked pretty when you marched down the road and did your graduation ceremony. And they laced up kind of like a corset on your leg, and they would come in on Thursday morning, and we would issue everybody a pair of leggings. And then Thursday afternoon after graduation, they'd come throwing them in a big pile, and we'd clean them up and put them back in the right sizes and put them in the right bins. And that's all we did all week. Except you had to stay out of sight if you didn't want to get in trouble and get extra work assigned. So there was a little break room up above leggings issue that was about the size of a small Sunday school class. And in this break room, there were five magazines. And I was a big reader, and there was nothing to do. There's no TV, no cell phones, nowhere to go. So I read all of these magazines about twice. And then some Gideon had left a copy of the Bible in there. And by the first half a day, I had read all the magazines two times, and I started reading that Bible. I read the Bible cover to cover during service week because I was bored. I got out of that. God sent me to a ship a couple of years later where there were 350 men on that ship. Out of those 350 men, as far as I know, as far as I was ever able to determine, there were 8 active Christians. 5 of them were in my immediate work group of 9 people. I think God set me up. And one night on the evening before my 25th birthday, I sat in a room with my immediate supervisor up 3 levels above the main deck in one of the radar rooms, and we talked for, I would say, around 4 hours. And we were talking about God and things like that, and he began to ask me why I didn't believe in God and why I didn't care for God. And I told him, you know, everything I've seen in life and everybody that I've watched, everything people do, they have a selfish motive. They always do it because they want to get something out of it. I said, and I'm no different. Everything I do it because I want to get something out of it. And I told him, I said, I don't see anything, any reason that God would want to have anything to do with me. There ain't nothing I can give him. There ain't nothing he wants that I have. And a God that is the God that you talk about, that's as good and as kind and as loving as you say he is, just wouldn't have any business fooling around with somebody like me or like any of the people I know. Well, we talked, like I say, for about 4 hours, and at one point he was quiet for a little bit, and he asked me, he said, you have children, don't you? And I said, well, you know I have children. You've met my children. And he said, do you love your children? Well, I got a little bit mad. Remember, I wasn't saved this time. Matter of fact, I remember balling up that fist right there when I answered him. And I said, of course I love my children. What kind of question is that? He said, why? He said, all they do is want to eat, and you got to take care of them. They cost you money. I said, what do your kids do for you? Well, that kind of set me back a little bit. I thought about it for a little while, and finally I thought, I've got him. I thought, I've got him now. I said, okay, well, here's the thing. See, I come home after deployment, or I come home after I've been gone for a while, and I open the door, and there's my son, and he looks up, and he breaks out in this big old grin. He's just happy to see me, and he gets up and runs over there and gives me a big hug, and he's so happy I'm home, and he's just happy that I'm alive and that I'm there. And I just love to see that look on his face. I said, not only that, you know, he loves me just because I'm his dad. Sometimes I'm not very good at it. But it doesn't matter much to him. He still wants to spend time with me. He still wants to be around me. I said, not only that, but it gives me a sense of pleasure to watch him grow up and try and help him not do some of the stupid things I did when I was his age. Well, this man was wise beyond his years, and he just kind of folded his arms and he sat back. And he leaned back in the chair and he just looked at me. And we looked at each other for probably, it seemed like a couple of hours, it's probably 5-10 minutes. And it slowly began to sink into the granite in my head. Maybe what God wants from us is to see our faces light up in his presence. Just to see somebody that's happy that he's there and happy to spend time with him and be around him. Maybe what he gets from us is he cares about us and loves us and wants to see us do well, and he wants to see us not do some of the stupid things we've already done again. And as this began to process through me, at some point that night, I gave my life to Christ. I've never been able to determine whether I was 24 years old or 25 years old, but it was about 10 minutes of either way. It was right around midnight. I know exactly where I was on the ship, but I don't know where the ship was in the water. And then I had a problem. I had got saved, and I was in among the biggest amount of water that anybody had ever seen. I couldn't get baptized. I had got saved, and I couldn't go to church. We didn't have church services on the ship. It wasn't until we got back to port that I was able to go to church for the first time as a saved person. And I went to the church he went to, which was a non-denominational church, and it was in the gym of a Seventh-day Adventist church. Somebody else rented their sanctuary because they have services on Saturday, and we rented their gym. We set chairs up and took them down every Sunday. My first mission experience was in that church. My wife and I had talked and prayed and thought about it, and we decided we were in San Diego, California. We decided we want to do something to help all these homeless people. So I went to the pastor the next Sunday, and I said, "Man, we'd love to get involved in something like that." And he looked at me, and he said, "That sounds great. Let me know how it turns out." And turned around and walked off. Wait a minute. That's not what I had in mind. Well, so we came up with a great idea. My wife's a great cook, so we fixed up a crock pot of stew and put it in the back of our old beat-up beater car, and we drove around feeding stew and talking gospel to homeless people until the local police department came and told us they was fixing to arrest me because we were serving food without keeping it to temp and without following all the rules and all that kind of stuff. So my first ministry experience didn't go all that great. But it wasn't long, about a year after that, I got transferred to Virginia with the military to shore duty. And I started looking for a church. Now, the only church I had ever been a part of was not associated with anybody who wasn't there that Sunday. And I started going around. I had talked to the pastor quite a bit, been in some Bible studies. I'd read the Bible through again by now. And I began talking to people and asking them, you know, I went to the Methodist church and asked him, what makes your church different than the others? And we visited several different churches. And about that time, my natural father had died without me ever having met him when I was barely a teenager. And he had been living with a girl who had two sons. And he died, he drowned off an oil rig back, like I say, when I was barely a teenager. And later on, she died. And then one of the sons who had a lot of health problems, he died, leaving one son left. And he got ready to sell this house they had been living in so he could buy another house. And when they went to do the title search, some lawyer called me up and said, you are due about a 1/8 or a 1/16 part of this house. All said and done, I got about $8,000 out of the deal. And being wise beyond my years, I ran right out and bought a motorcycle because that's what you do when you have extra money. I had never been on a motorcycle before, but it seemed like it'd be fun. So first time I ever rode one, I rode it home from the dealership. And then I started riding around in the back roads there by our house, trying to learn how to ride it well enough to pass the driver's test. And the last place, the furthest I could go down the back roads and turn around before I got to the highway was a little Southern Baptist church. Round Hill Baptist Church. And I used their parking lot for about 4 days to learn to ride a motorcycle in, turning around. And I said, well, this Sunday, I guess we ought to visit the church. I've already visited the parking lot. And I talked to the pastor and some of the people there, and I have considered myself a Southern Baptist ever since I first went to that church. About a year and a half or so after being at that church, one of the ladies of the church came up to me and said, have you ever considered that you might be called to preach? And what came into my head was, have you ever considered that you might have lost your mind? And two or three other people said something like that, and I almost quit going to church. About 6 months after that, I preached my first sermon there at Round Hill. I was licensed to preach at Round Hill Baptist Church in Virginia. And it wasn't long before I was going to get out of the military, and my wife had grown up in a church as an unsaved person, thinking she was saved, had grown up in a little church in East Texas, back where we were from, Lindale, Texas. And the pastor there wanted to go back to Mexico and be a missionary again. And we talked a little bit, and he said, why don't you come back, and we'll pastor together for a little while, and when things are going good, I'll go on and be a missionary, and you can take over the church. Now, here I was. I had no seminary, had no formal education, nothing. I was just going out there, a little Bible Baptist, independent Baptist church. About, 10, 12 people in that church, all total. And time came up. It's very apt because not long after I got there, one of the ladies came up and said, "Are we going to do VBS this year?" And I said, "I don't know. What is it?" I had never heard of VBS before. So they started telling me what it was. I said, "Well, it sounds like something good to do." We planned our first VBS. We decided to make birdhouses for crafts and a little popsicle stick birdhouses. And we went way out of the way. We had about 5 kids in the church. And we decided we were going to go whole hog. We were going to buy enough stuff to do like 12 kids in VBS. Oh, my wife says 20. Okay, so we decided 20. Whatever it was way over the top, anything we expected. The first night, we didn't have enough birdhouses. We didn't have but about half the number we needed. The final night, we had well over 50 kids come to that little church's VBS. We had 4 volunteers doing VBS. And the person who was in charge of VBS had never even seen one before. That was exciting. From there, I went and moved up to Kansas. I preached there various churches. I moved up to Iowa and pastored a church up in Iowa. Came back to Kansas and preached a little bit. And eventually made my way up in Iowa. I was in the Conservative Baptist Association, because there's not many Southern Baptists up in Iowa, believe it or not. And eventually made my way back. I decided I was going to take a job that would allow me to get back into ministry more significantly. And I took a job with Federal Railroad Administration and came to Arkansas. And it wasn't long before I began to pastor Palestine Baptist Church. And I pastored there for 5 years. But after a couple of months, I came to the deacons with a strange request. I said, "Now, due to all the circumstances that all this has occurred and the weirdness of just my life in general, this is actually the first church that was part of a Southern Baptist Association that I have pastored. And a long time ago, when I got licensed in Virginia, their practice was the first church you pastored in the association ordained you." I said, "I would like to be ordained as a Southern Baptist rather than just as an independent." And so I got ordained, about 30 years after I started preaching in the Southern Baptist Association. And the time came shortly after COVID when I decided that God had done I had done all I could do there, or all God wanted me to do there. And I went to approach the church and I said, "Well, it's that time." And I said, I'll give you some time to start looking, but I'm going to have to go." They said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I have no idea. But it's time for somebody else to come in and begin this ministry." We had a difference of vision and viewpoint. To be honest, the church just kind of wanted to keep the status quo and keep things going as they were, and I wanted to stir the pot too much and I wanted to do some outreach and get outside the walls, and we planned some events and had some things going, and I think I was starting to annoy some of the folks because we were always doing something other than just Sunday morning church. So I resigned from that church, and I felt at that time, my anticipation was, in 2 or 3 months, I'll be in another church somewhere. Except it wasn't. And time passed, and things occurred, and I preached a few places. And I came here to visit this church because I had been told that this church was without a pastor. And I wanted to come and see and say, "Well, is this a place that I would like to apply?" And we came and visited the church, didn't tell anybody who we were, what we were doing there, and we had a really good time. We really enjoyed the worship and enjoyed the people. But we didn't come early enough to go to Sunday school. And I said, "Well, before I make any call, I want to come back and go to Sunday school and see this church. So we came back a second time, and I got caught. Associational missionary was here preaching that day, and of course he knew who I was, and he brought it up and told everybody who I was. So I couldn't sneak around anymore and spy on you. So I told the church, and I told the leadership that I intended to put a resume in. As a matter of fact, I had brought one with me. And we went out to dinner, and I handed it to Doug that day, and I said, I won't bother you again unless you call me. Well, time went by, and it took you guys a while to get your committee formed and do the things you did, and I got a phone call, and we had seen that you had a movie night scheduled for the Saturday before the Sunday I was supposed to preach, and they had called me and asked me if I'd preach. And my wife and I debated and prayed over it and said, well, I said I wouldn't come back till they invited me. They invited me, but they didn't invite me till Sunday, and the movie's on Saturday. Well, we came to the movie anyway. And we began attending and eventually joined the church, and I talked to the search committee a little bit, and there's a lot of things going on there but that I won't get into. But on that second Sunday, actually after the first one, between the first and the second when we first visited, my wife and I talked and we prayed and we decided that we felt called to the East End community, and we felt called to East End Baptist Church. In the time between then and when I first preached here, I bought a house in East End and moved. Since then, nothing has changed that I feel called to this church. That's still my feeling. I felt that way since that first visit. Now, if you knew all the details, I could tell you that there's been times I have been highly confused about that. There's been things that when other churches called and talked to me, and there's been times when I was talking to the search committee and various things that I talked to God and said, God, what in the world are you doing? What in the world is going on? I can't say that I've always known what God planned. I can look back in my life and definitely see the hand of God directing and the hand of God setting things up. Just like prophecy, usually when I've taught a few prophecy classes, and when I talk about prophecy, I always start with a disclaimer. I say, first thing you need to understand about prophecy is this. The people that originally received the prophecy, the priest or the prophet or whoever gave the prophecy to the people, apparently, as you read the text, apparently didn't really understand everything that the prophecy meant. The people who heard the prophecy generally seemed to have no idea what the prophecy meant. The people who lived at the time when the prophecy was fulfilled, most of the time didn't notice that the prophecy got fulfilled. Most of the time, it's not until afterwards, looking back, that you go, you know, that all fit together. That all worked. I think God works that way in our lives a lot of times. When you talk about salvation, I told you the highlights of my salvation story. I could look back and see the points where God intervened in my life to get me where I am. I couldn't see them at the time. If you'd have told me about it at the time, I'd have probably laughed at you. But looking back, I can see God working and steering and directing my life. The churches that I've been in, there were times that things have happened and circumstances have occurred, and I've thought, man, what in the world is going on here? There's been times I've spent a lot of time in prayer trying to figure it out and trying to figure out what to do next or what's going on. But as I look back, I can see God's hand and I can see a plan. Looking back, it's pretty easy to pick out. Sometimes when I'm in the middle of it, it's not as easy. Well, I'm at another one of those points in my life. I don't know what's coming up. I don't know what's ahead. As a matter of fact, y'all are going to decide some of that here this afternoon. I do know this. God very definitely has a plan, and God has been active. whatever you guys decide to do in that business meeting, I can see God having been active here in this church and having been active in my life while I've been here. I don't know what God's ultimate plan is. As a matter of fact, if I did, it'd probably scare me and I'd probably go the other direction. But I know this. I've seen God work here in this church. I've seen God work in my life while I've been in this church. Man sitting right there, I've seen God work in his life while we've been here. We talked in VBS about God sightings. The last few months, I've seen a lot of God sightings. Whatever God's plan is for the future, I expect to see thousands and thousands more. I firmly believe that God has a plan for this church, that he has a plan for the life of each individual in this church. As a matter of fact, I believe that God puts churches together in the same way that he puts people together. He gives you certain life experiences and certain things to overcome and certain things to deal with that give you a background and a set of skills that make you the person you are, because he knows what's coming. And he knows you're going to need it at a particular point. I think God does the same thing with churches. He brings people into churches with skills and backgrounds and abilities and talents and gifts because he knows what's coming in the life of that church. I think God has assembled a particular set of people in this place because God has a plan. And that everybody has a value and everybody has a use. I think that God has a plan for every person in this church and a way that every person fits in and contributes to the body. I don't think God ignores anybody. So as we talk about salvation, salvation is the first step to becoming part of a church. Not just a building or a group of people, but part of an organization led by Jesus Christ. That's a group of people who are going to spend all of eternity together. One of the things we talked about in Vacation Bible School one of the nights was that Jesus helps us live forever. He does that if we accept him. If we put on that helmet of salvation. I was waiting for the trust Jesus toot. I thought maybe I'd get that. You can't imagine how many times I made them say that in Bible class. The steps of salvation are real easy. Or they're real simple. Sometimes they're hard. But they're real simple to understand. Confess with your mouth, Jesus is Lord. Believe in your heart that he died on the cross for your sins. Basically, we make an exchange. We take the perfect life that Jesus Christ led. And he's willing to swap the results of his perfect life for the results of the life we've led. He's willing to trade out the reward for living a perfect life for whatever we deserve from the life that we've lived. All he requires is we give our life to him and he gives his life to us. It's a very simple transaction. It's not always easy. Sometimes it's tough to give that up. One of the things you have to give up is you don't get to be boss of the world anymore. If you let God be God, you don't get to be God. And that's tough for a lot of us. That's difficult. One of the things that becomes so emotionally charged is that God is in control of every step, of everything, of life, and all that comes after life. And I'll tell you this, he's in control whether we tell him he can be or not. He's in control whether we say we allow it or not, whether we accept it or not. So I feel confident in this. God is in control in this church. He is in control in each of our lives. He's in the control and where we go today and where we go tomorrow. We may not acknowledge it or accept it. We may not sometimes not like it. There have been times in my life when I have struggled against God. Let me tell you, let me give you a little secret of life, those of you that hadn't tried that yet. I always lost. And that's a good thing. I hope that everyone here has put on the helmet of salvation. If you have not yet joined the church, those that have surrendered to Christ, don't wait to do that. We talked about it in VBS. We've talked about it in church. Folks, I have read what happens to those that don't spend eternity in heaven. And it is not a pleasant thing. I do believe that there is a literal hell. I do believe that there are people who die and spend eternity without God. I told you that I grew up in a family where my father, well, he was a man I never met. Well, my problems that I received from that and the leftover baggage that I got from that stayed with me. They still come up time to time. But I'm going to tell you, that's mostly solved today. You know how it got solved? It wasn't because of my adopted daddy. He wasn't a very nice man. Matter of fact, we didn't get along for a long time. It was because I now have a Father in heaven. Because everything that I was looking for in my life, everything that I was missing in my life, came into my life on the eve of my 25th birthday. And I've never looked back. Everything that made me the person that I am today, everything that changed me, if you'd have known me back when I was 24, not only would you not be having me come up here stand and talk to you about being a preacher, you might not let me in the doors of the church. I didn't have the language for it. I didn't have the attitude for it. There was a time in my life that I drank like a fish. I did everything wrong. But there came a day when it all changed. And all of that garbage that happened the first 25 years of my life just washed down the street. All of that stuff just flowed away. I became an entirely new and different person. Now that person wasn't perfect either. My wife could give you a list. But I can tell you this, there is no comparison between the life I lived the first 25 years and the life I've lived since then. The amount of happiness and joy in my life, the amount of satisfaction in my life, my eternal destination, everything changed. If that has not happened for you, don't worry about the business meeting this afternoon. Worry about that business. Don't worry about what's coming. Worry about what's here now. Get that taken care of. If you have any question about that, if you have anything that you want to get resolved, let's do that now. I think we have a closing song or two. It would be a great time to get that business taken care of at the altar. I'll talk to you. Doug will talk to you. Randy might even talk. He might even stop singing if you want to get saved. I bet he would. While they get ready, let's bow our heads again. Father, you are in the business of changing lives. You are in the business of